Born in the pandemic era, thriving in the Zoom era, it's Resonance Rewind, sharing lessons from the creatives of yesteryear for the population of today.
Right, detonate.
Well, that's the last of the explosives, sir.
Yeah. Don't know how they expect us to keep on schedule without explosives. When's the next shipment due?
There's another helijet on its way, sir.
I think you'll find the contents of the envelope satisfactory.
I don't want any more of your money, Corporal. You didn't tell me men would be killed. Isn't there some other way?
No, there is not. If that tunnel is completed, it will take less than an hour to drive from one country to the other.
And of course, that wouldn't suit your government's plans. They'd become economically strong.
That is why we have taken out a little insurance.
Insurance?
Yes. You, my friend, you are in this up to your neck. The army knows how to deal with a traitor and a saboteur.
All right.
Good. The two governments are already stretching their financial resources to the limit. Soon one will be forced to pull out, and the Kachunga Tunnel Project will have to be cancelled. Let's drink to it.
~140 liters of U-114 explosive for the Kachunga Tunnel. Exciting times, especially when you have political intrigue and shenanigans dealing with nations' economies at stake. Perhaps it's a job for Colonel McLean and two brain patterns for Joe 90 in the latest Resonance Rewind. We'll be right back. Let's find out from one of our key followers of teeny tiny marionette puppets what at least the opening sequence, because we'll find a full sort of sequence from our correspondent in the fullness of this particular program. But Jessica Bertus, what have you made of the opening start of Joe 90, Colonel McLean?
I think it's a very interesting cross of very serious, more like militaristic type operations with teeny tiny little people. And I think that is such a cute little contrast. It is so adorable seeing these tiny, very serious doll faces. I think it's very fun so far, and continuing in our league of various marionette and little tiny doll shows, I think it's good that we're getting more in. I will never get tired of seeing tiny dolls having to engage in life or death scenarios.
And it is pretty life or death, because they've got that explosive that's being tripped over to the Kachunga Dam and so on. Obviously, political shenanigans going on as well. There's bribery, there's corruption at a governmental level and so on. And clearly, yeah, the whole problem is going to be solved by a 9-year-old boy with the brain patterns of not one, but two military experts.
Yes, I think that's such a... At first, I was taken off guard by... having a little kid going in to try to save the day. But I think actually it makes it perfect for a show for, if it was meant for younger children, because I think that's always the dream when you're a kid, is like you imagine yourself as that little hero. And that's the same as adults when adults watch television shows, but being able to see like a little kid saving the day among other adults, I think is really interesting. Very, very unexpected, since this is my first episode going in, but I think it makes it more interesting.
I'm not sure what, I think you might have been with us when we looked at Most Special Agent, which was the very first episode of Joe 90, which he was introduced to the whole notion of the brain impulse galvanoscope record and transfer device by his father, Professor Ian McLean, his adopted father. And there's a lot of ethical issues about is it really fair to actually ensure that a 9-year-old is effectively put up as a secret agent to actually cope with the world's wrongs and wherewithals, given, of course, that his noted friend Sam Luver is Uncle Sam. I think we know where we're going with that one. And, of course, the wonderful World Intelligence Network. So intriguing in terms of that. I think it's set somewhere around about 2012 in the Anderson universe. Oh.
That's interesting. Okay, that setting makes it so much more fascinating. I feel like 2012 was one of the more iconic years for some reason. But the moral qualms of having a child hero who didn't ask, kind of a guinea pig, I guess, for his mad scientist adoptive father. I don't know that a 9-year-old can consent to becoming the savior of the world, but it makes for an interesting storyline.
Although, as this particular episode does manifest, when he's in the car with his adopted father and Sam Luver, and of course Shane Weston, the head of WIN, there is the line where Professor McLean turns to him and says, "What do you think, Joe?" And of course the response is very positive. So there we are. We'll find out more about what Jessica's thoughts are read Joe 90, Colonel McLean, as the program proceeds, but I think it's time we had another little dose of the music of Barry Gray. All Well, we've heard a little smidgen of what Jessica Burtis thought of her experience of Joe 90, Colonel McLean. But obviously, Resonance Rewind is more than just the sum of its parts, or indeed its composite number of brain impulse, galvanoscope, record and transfer, which is probably the last time I'll actually say this on this particular episode. So let's turn to Jared Palmer. Welcome back, Jared. It's been quite a gap since you were last on Resonance Rewind. You've been busy actually doing your finals, your final filmmaking projects as a final year student in film and television studies at the University of Lincoln. So please share with us your thoughts on this 1968 experience and Gerry Anderson cult classic, first aired on the 27th of October, 1968, Colonel McLean.
Well, Alex, going into this, I didn't actually know that Joe 90 was Gerry Anderson, because, of course, I'm a big fan of both Thunderbirds and Captain Scarlet and Space 1999. But I'd never heard of Joe 90. So coming into this, this was a bit of a new experience. And I kind of really did it at first enjoy the sort of like the interactions as well as the way they presented Joe, that despite being a child, he's both able to structurally and quite authoritatively give command. And you do also see the dynamic between the sergeant and it's also quite interesting seeing that, because I don't think we really get that many episodes where you give the power to more to the children based, and it was clearly quite child based episode, but I generally did enjoy the way that they structure it out, and the way that they handled it was very, very well done.
Okay, interesting response from that point of view. Jessica, welcome back to the program. When last we spoke, you had you'd managed to actually catch part of the whole program. Have you watched it in its entirety now? What are your thoughts, please?
Yes, I am surprised there were even more tiny fireworks. I would love to know who was the explosives manager on this show. And I'm very curious, like, do we know how big the sets are and how big the characters are?
Approximately 6 to 7 inches, I believe, in terms of the actual thing. I mean, we were talking maybe slightly taller. Sometimes Joe 90 would actually go up to, I think, a foot. I've seen the actual models, and then he would actually be there. But they were marionettes. This was a significant part of the Gerry Anderson period, because it was post Captain Scarlet, and Captain Scarlet was when they first started making much more realistic models, as opposed to the wonders of Thunderbird, Stingray, Fireball XL5, Supercar and so on. So they're very keen to actually get to the whole aspect of realism, and of course they would go on to make real motion pictures. And Derek Meddings, of course, who was responsible for the special effects on such movies as Superman, and indeed a whole range of other factors, was very much within that whole field. But I know you have a fondness for the teeny tiny souls, etc. Let's turn to Pamela Suman. Pamela, who's been working very hard today because it is the official launch of her whole new record project, Changa Changa. There we are, Pamela. Another shameless plug for yourself, Pamela, in terms of this. I literally just posted the feature interview that we did with yourself, Jessica, Paul X. Murphy, etc. So people who are listening to this Resonance Rewind can also get a double whammy of New York Real Talk episode 64 as well. But we're here to talk Joe 90. So please, Pamela Suman, your thoughts.
Goodness, Alex. Yeah, Joe 90. You know, it's so weird when I watch Joe 90, because I think of so many things outside the episode. Like, for example, you know, did he have a normal adulthood? Like, okay, so he's a kid, and he's tasked with all these missions, and he's having his brainwaves, you know, filled up with all, you know, this information that's hopefully not altering him chemically in any way. But I wonder what kind of a life he had after he stopped being Joe 90, or was he Joe 90 even as an adult, or is that like, okay, you've aged out now, we have to find a new Joe 90, or we have to stop this, like, we can no longer have you, and that's it. Like, I think about this kid, it's almost like the Russian dancers, ballerinas that start when they're three, you know, when they get twisted and bent and formed and spend their lives in a studio, and they almost, you know, they can't have normal lives. So this is kind of where I go when I watch. But I did notice a few things. I'm gonna have to put my glasses on because
Those special Joe 90 glasses, Pamela.
Yeah,
of course.
They kind of are, aren't they? When I looked it up, it said equipment used, World Air Force bomber, nuclear bomb, Arctic ship, mini sub, and killer subs. So, very obviously, this was written by men. And little boys must have absolutely adored it, but as a very genetically typical female, I have to say that I just glaze over all that stuff. I'm like, la la la. Oh, look, he's wearing a blue shirt. Oh, look, the tea. Oh, they actually had wine. He and the other guy had wine in this very swanky, kind of like late 60s, early 70s place. And there was no wine in the glass, and they were about to toast. And I'm like, you can't toast. There's nothing in the glass. This is where I go.
Okay. Thank you for that, Pavla. Let's turn to another ace musician, of course. We've already talked about Changa Changa having their release today. Of course, earlier in the week, we were delighted to celebrate Still a Long Way to Go, which, of course, is the latest release from Victoria Simmons. Victoria, would you like to share on this, your first experience, of course, of Resonance Rewind, what you made of Joe 90, the Tony Barrick written episode of course, the series?
Well, I'm actually wondering why they aren't playing it now, because you get all these TV shows that are put out again. And of course, you've still got Wallace and Gromit and loads of other things. But why aren't they playing Joe 90?
Interesting. It's funnily enough, I think it's one of Gerry Anderson's least favourite, and certainly Jamie Anderson's never been really fond of this particular series. But like yourself, I think it's been vastly underrated. It could be argued, of course, that the show we're actually having next week, Dollhouse, bases itself quite extensively on Joe 90. Phil Leonis, I suspect you might have one or two things to add to the 25 minutes worth of this particular show.
Alex, I had never heard of this show before. And so I was very excited because, as you know, I admire the Andersons a great deal and can't believe, you know, again, I probably shouldn't be revealing this, but there was a time when every single security password I had online and elsewhere was all Thunderbirds or Go. So I'm a fan. I come in so excited. There's this whole new world that I get to explore, a world, as Pamela said, without any feminine influence whatsoever, which was a major complaint about this, it turns out, when it came out. But then the show starts. And again, I know nothing about it. I'm tabula rasa, which is also the name of a great bar I just discovered down the street. And the opening of this show is full of all these wonderful mid-century modern aesthetic touches, like the design of the sets, the swinging fashion, the facial hair. I mean, am I gonna be in my Palm Springs? It's like I Spy, you know, before we knew that Culp and Cosby were creepy. But it was fabulous for a few minutes there. And not only was it fabulous, but there's this scene where, like, the villain is talking to someone, and the way that dialogue scene is shot, I'm going, this is groundbreaking. Why am I not filming dialogue scenes like this? Unfortunately, after a few minutes, all those inventive touches go away right around the time where we're introduced to Joe 90, a character with no character, who is a cipher, who is just what, apparently, if this is indicative of the whole show, he is just what gets imprinted upon him. Storytelling comes from character. If you don't have a character, then what you're doing is what all bad shows do, which is just implanting plot upon your characters. And Pamela, if you want to know what happens to kids when they grow, who as kids have what adults want imprinted on those kids' brains, well, just look no further than Macaulay Culkin. He is an adult. We'll let you know what happens to them.
Yeah, no, I know a bit about that. They changed the UTMA laws because you can no longer take all your money out when you're a kid and buy a house and get married at, what, 15, 16, something like that. I think
so. So I don't understand. I really don't understand the whole I love Spy-Fi. I thought at the best in this show, which again didn't last long, I thought, oh, man, this is kind of Johnny Quest territory. This could be excellent. And then it's like, am I wrong? Is the whole joke every episode just, but you're a kid?
A 9-year-old boy.
Yeah.
Or five. Wow.
Boy, jokes about 9-year-old boys grow old very quickly.
Victoria, arguing from the point of view of it coming back. I mean, your first experience of this, I'm not sure how much Gerry Anderson you'd follow. I know you're a keen science fiction follower and fan of Doctor Who and so on, something you share in common with Pamela and the Phil and so on, and certainly Jared. But any thoughts on what you've heard so far from the team?
Well, I was a big Thunderbirds fan when I was little. So actually, as Pamela was saying, with all the blowing up stuff, I actually really enjoyed. But with the storyline, I sort of thought, okay, I'm not entirely sure what the guys at the beginning are talking about relative to a load of tanks blowing up afterwards. And there didn't seem to be much of a storyline to follow on with. I'm say the Famous Five, when I listen to that one, they've got a plot that goes through and it has highs and lows. And that one didn't seem to have quite as many highs and lows as it could have done.
This gets back to this idea that story has to come from character, because the highs and lows are the arcs that human beings experience when they come into contact with these various plot elements, with these conflicts. How does it affect them? But again, if your main character is just a cipher without any discernible personality of their own, just imprinted upon them, I get more story from the AI that decides what my personality is going to be like every day.
And in many ways, that could be seen as being foreshadowed by the world of Geo 90, as we say, that big rat, the brain impulse galvanoscope record and transfer sequence, which is at the heart of this. What about the touches to, obviously, the CIA as represented by WIN, the World Intelligence Network, and, of course, the friend of Joe's father, of course, Professor McLean, that's Sam Luver, of course, Uncle Sam, and of course, Shane Weston. It's often said that Shane Weston, Sam Luver, and Ian McLean, played by Rupert Davis, or voiced by Rupert Davis, with Keith Alexander doing Shane Weston and David Healy doing Sam Luver, that they were very much the characters. That, and actually, maybe one of the aspects of this show that didn't work was because you literally, well, you had Joe and you had the sergeant, and of course you had the other sadly deceased traveling officer from that point of view, and the tension was basically, were they going to get this explosive over to its Kachunga tunnel base to effectively ensure that once again a country could actually benefit financially from it against all the villainy and shenanigans, the likes of which probably Hiroshima's G7 summit can only dream of at present.
Look, you lost me at the Uncle Sam and the WIN, because, you know, when there's references that subtle, I often fail to notice them. There's a degree to which, right, we can always believe that as adults, maybe we're being a little too sophisticated, that this is maybe entertainment aimed at younger folks. My experience is, quite frequently, younger folks are more sophisticated than we are, in that they're going to get bored much more quickly with jokes that adults think are clever. And that would also explain why this show did not last long, I think.
30 episodes, though, Phil, and it does actually end on Joe 90's 10th birthday. So, interesting line on that basis.
Well, I guess I'll certainly need to watch more.
Jared.
Yeah, I think it's a bit interesting as well, especially with the child dynamic as well, because I don't think for a lot of the roles back then, there were many like children sort of like roles in terms of Gerry Anderson's shows. And I also think, going off from both Thunderbirds and Captain Scarlet, you definitely can see a lot of the mixture in there, and definitely the vehicles as well. I definitely noticed a lot of them were hiding from that. But it's very interesting as well, as in terms of how well he sort of reconfigured that for the show. And I definitely think that this should be brought back if it's not brought back for like an animated show, it should be adapted by Big Finish, because I believe they still do some of the Anderson stuff.
There has indeed been various audio forms of Joe 90 that have emerged in a sort of TV 21 way. And indeed, there was great excitement that a new Joe 90 technical manual is being released, which is available online. Shameless plug there for Jamie Anderson, as he is a colleague. Even though Jamie was not really keen on this actually being released, he's not a fan, but we're trying to persuade him otherwise. Jessica, back to yourself. You've heard Pamela and Phil, as you've heard Victoria's, obviously. Any sort of rebuttal that you'd like to provide, or anything that you thought actually is worth noting before we start talking about characters, which might bring a smile from Phil?
I mean, to be honest, I think the repetition is something that I definitely notice with shows as I get older. I think a lot of times as a kid, like when I would watch like Pokemon, for example, and there was always the villains in every episode, I think that that didn't bore me. Like when I try to rewatch shows now, I'm like, it's gimmicky over and over. But at the time watching it like week by week, I just thought it was like part of the core message of the show. But I do have to say that it's very important. I keep picturing Joe 90 as Graham Harper, because I don't know if anybody remembers in like a Midweek Drive episode, Graham said that when he was a little kid in Britain, you could go to a teeny tiny tank driving course and drive teeny tiny tanks. So this whole episode, I was just seeing this kid in glasses driving a tank, and I was like, this is Graham Harper. This is him.
Sadly, Graham couldn't be with us today because he's working on projects with Pam. But never mind, that's a different line entirely. Victoria, any thoughts from yourself in terms of how the thing operates? Is it something you'd want to watch more of, shall we say? Or is it a case of, no, I can do without the other 29 episodes?
Sorry, I've got dogs barking. But I could probably not watch the other episodes. It finished quite abruptly, I felt. But I wouldn't probably watch the others.
It's okay. I mean, as I say, we will be moving on, although I think it's worth noting that there was a nice little homage, which I'm surprised Phil didn't actually pick up on, between the truck as it's actually going up the hill and the excitement of the same sequence in Ice Cold in Alex, where you also had a sort of truck with explosives going up a hill, without the explosive end, of course.
I always love when you discuss explosive ends. I particularly enjoyed, I must say, the bridge sequence, though. I really did. I thought the going over the bridge and the destruction of the bridge, I thought that was terribly exciting. And there is, you know, I'm clearly on the negative review side of this, while maintaining my fandom towards the brilliance of this whole production team and their approach. And you know, the way it's a textbook, actually, on using what we would call second unit to create action sequences. You know, those shots of tires and the close-ups on the bridge and the bridge shaking. This is in live action how we put these things together. And this show is actually a wonderful textbook for film students on, here's how you build tension in action sequences.
So kudos to director Ken Turner then, which is good for it from that point of view.
Or to the second unit director, we don't know. So,
yeah. Well, let's move on to the characters. And Jessica, we'll come to you first.
Oh, wait a minute. There were characters?
Let's move on to Jessica. Anybody who stands out for yourself as your favorite, would it have actually been Sam Luver? Would it be Joe himself? Would it be Shane Weston? Would it be Professor Ian McLean? Would it be one of the sergeants? Where are you going to go, Jessica?
I mean, I think I related a lot to Joe, because that's definitely how I imagined myself as a kid, as being this capable as a little child. So I think as a kid, I would have related to him. But I this makes no sense. I really like the tree that they had to pull down with the rope. I just thought it was so tiny, and I'm obsessed with all the tiny sets, and I really appreciated it.
I think that's impressive, Jessica. Once again, you've raised that bar or fells that tree, which is very impressive. So it's a thumbs up for a tree and not just an honorable mention for the set designer. Jared, are you going to go beyond the tree? And please don't say that's an example of wooden acting.
No, I wasn't going to mention the tree. I would have to say it's Joe 90 as well, because he's the most memorable character in the episode. And also, I think for me, I definitely see some sort of childhood resemblance of me wanting to be that capable, which I wasn't as a child. But yeah, pretty much, I think I need to watch more episodes to get into the hang of the other characters. But Joe is the one that stood out the most.
Come on, Johnson, as he'd actually say, put him on a charge. It's always very important to ensure that you actually have full instructions on that basis. Victoria, what about yourself in terms of favourite characters?
I actually liked the officer that didn't die, simply because when he first meets Joe 90, he doesn't like him. He thinks he's completely stupid to even be a child doing all of this, and it's completely irrational. But then as he develops a relationship with him, by the end of it, he's saying, yes, sir, yes, Colonel, and actually having respect for him because of what he's able to do.
Again, I was very impressed for a 9-year-old actually having the physical power of being able to drive one of those hugely humongous trucks.
And very short legs.
Very, very short legs. So, you know, again, suspension of disbelief required from that point of view. Okay, Pamela. I suspect you're going more towards the Phil Leonis aspect here, but maybe not.
I have two words: historical perspective. And I think that, Jessica and I have talked about this, you know, where we have to put aside all of the, you know, the unfortunate parts of something being made at a certain time, and have to just suspend our disbelief and just go with it. So because of that, I would say Len Jones as Joe McClane. And I looked it up, not that I wasn't paying attention to this. I was just double multitasking, which females I think can do. But I'm really being cheeky. I've had too much coffee. Basically, he's no longer acting. He was born in 1951. He was a child actor, note the word was. So, God, I hope it wasn't a horrible experience, but it might have been a little intense for him. So maybe that's why he doesn't do it anymore. But well, I also have to say that we have been watching, Faye, Jerry, and myself, we've been watching a lot of film and TV from this era recently. And we just saw A Hard Day's Night. Yes, Alex, we saw A Hard Day's Night. Faye and I, we were belly laughing, especially when the woman falls in the hole. But this whole time period, this whole, like, I don't know, 20 years, it's kind of a long time, but there was just, I kind of, you'd say encapsulate it. She said, you know, I missed my time. I should have been around then, you know, because there's just this innocence. There's things that they couldn't do now that they could do then. And even if they did them and you're like, oh God, why did they do that? They did them. And that's wonderful. And it's absolutely adorable.
So is your favorite character then going to be Joe 90?
Yeah, because there's no crazy alien mermaid fish that swam by that I could, you know, choose coming from the sea. I'm going to go with him. And I'm going to go with him on behalf of underage actors that possibly get abused. We don't know in these kinds of settings.
Well, there we are, Joe McClane. I can also confirm that the Fanderson organization, or at least the Gerry Anderson organization, has put out a specific request to try and track down Len Jones. Because they are trying to actually get back in touch with him, but who knows?
Is he gone off the?
It would seem so. He seems to have gone missing for quite some time. Okay, Jared, your favorite character? Maybe he's undercover somewhere, Pamela.
It's not good.
I think I already said my favorite character on here.
You have indeed. Yes, let's turn to Phil then. Phil Leonis.
Popol. I mean, Coppola, the villain, is the only character in the whole episode. And that's even before we take into account that that spectacular sport coat that he has without lapels. That alone, that sport coat does better acting than anyone else in the whole show. But the character's fantastic. The facial hair, the red tie, it's all on point. His villainy, they know he's good. That's why they keep zooming into close-ups and zooming out on him when he's setting up the plot in his Palm Springs-esque fantasy mid-century modern paradise. Yes, a whole show about Coppola, I'm on board with.
And no kids.
Children actors, I mean, we know that they are mistreated. What we want to ignore is the fact they deserve it.
Terrible.
That joke works in the UK. It doesn't work here in America. I have it on good authority, though, that Joe 90 himself was not a child actor, that he was a dwarf.
So. Okay, let's move on before we actually go completely unpolitically correct on this aspect. It's worth mentioning, I feel, the music. Barry Gray, once again, I think at the heart of so much of the work of Gerry Anderson. And he does manage both the orchestral highs here and the lows and the drama. I mean, we mentioned, Phil, obviously, the crossing of the bridge, etc. Again, a trope that appears frequently in perilous movies from the Saturday morning serials of days gone by through to the contemporary Indiana Jones epics and so on. But Barry Gray, I think, manages to actually, again, continue to raise the bar here. And in fact, Victoria, any thoughts for you on the music?
When it started, I could tell immediately that it was by the same person that did Thunderbirds. As soon as it started. But that I thought it could have done with a little bit more during the program, sort of like suspense music or something like that. That would have been good.
Pamela, I believe you're not a fan of music. You prefer the silence and the simple sort of absence of sound to focus more on the dialogue. Is that true?
Yeah, I do. I mean, my school of thought is definitely like, you know, more sort of the art film approach or even the absolutely bizarre, French New Wave cinema, unless it's a Michel Legrand thing, they just don't really have. I mean, I appreciate the silence, but on a show like this, it's not exactly like highbrow drama, so you know the silence might be an awkward silence where they're like, oh look, okay, the guy his little legs moved across, that's cute, you know. But I didn't think there was too little music, but then I never ever do think that there's too little music, which is ironic.
So let's move to the scores for the team for this one. Jessica, we'll come to you first. What's your score for this particular episode of Joe 90, the 16th episode produced and apparently the 5th broadcast? What would you give it?
I think it's I'm between a 7 and 7.5, so 7.25. Very specific, but I feel like that's exactly what I would give it. I think it was very cute and very adorable. I think I would have wanted a bit more from the plot, but I thought it was very, very.
A 7.25. Yeah, I must admit, I think I'm hovering around the 7 zone, but that's the by. Victoria?
I'm going with 6.5, mainly because I'd have liked a bit more storyline, like Jessica said, but you have to admit that the puppets are really well done. They're a lot cleaner than the Thunderbirds and the Captain Scarlet, I think it was, that came before. So I'm going with 6.5.
Okay. I mean, there are certain heads were interchanged between the series Captain Scarlet and indeed Joe 90. So you may actually recognize some of the puppets' heads literally being interchanged on that basis. Again, a foreshadowing of artificial intelligence and perhaps ChatGPTs. Jared?
I'd have to say it's a 7 for me, since I really enjoyed the episode, but focus point. And I just love the way that the puppets always moved around. And I know that there's always been a thing about whether it's being strings or whether it's being green screening and whether they actually get the guys to actually move the arms and legs But it's just, it's very interesting. And I do see that the puppets are a little bit more posh since Thunderbirds. But yeah, no, overall, I enjoyed the episode.
And is it true that you're heading off to America shortly, Jared?
It is. So I will be in America next week. I think it's on Wednesday at Newark Airport. And then from there, I'll be going to French Woods for camp counseling for the entire summer.
I have a new motto, by the way, for the Newark Airport that I really did come up with that I want them to use in their advertising. Newark, oh, it's just as good as you remember it. the New York resident appreciated that a great deal. Yeah.
So,
hey, can I ask a question before we go on with the rest of the scores? I'm sorry, but you may have addressed this at the beginning, but I am curious why this episode. Is this considered one of the best? Is it considered one of the worst? Is it just why this one?
It's kind of mid-range to not great. The best one was probably arguably or is generally regarded as being See You Down There. But I thought it would be useful, having looked at Joe 90 in the initial incarnation, episode one, a few months back when we looked at his view as most special agent, which was all a dream, we thought we'd actually drop this in as an interesting line. But good question. And what would be your score, Pamela Suman?
Yeah, this is kind of an all-time low for me because I'm usually the Pollyanna of scoring. But I give it this many points because of that amazing scene, that diabolical scene that they're in this really swish kind of restaurant that I would have liked to be in, although they should have put wine in their glasses. Anyway, because of that and because of the adorable, you know, quotient, like it was really adorable. And other than that, it was just boring for me. It was so, so boring that I give it a 6.
Oh. Villainous.
Women can be so kind and forgiving when they don't like something. This is why, by the way, so many movies and TV shows have gotten away for so long without having female representation in it, because women are willing to put up with it because it's what their guys want to watch. And I am at the point where, honestly, anything, if it doesn't have a female lead, why are we wasting our time with it? I'm going to be very kind, very generous on this, and I'm giving it a 3. Probably twice as much as it deserves.
Well, next week, you'll be pleased to know, we actually return to a series which does have a female lead, played by Alicia Dushku. And we have the adventures of her in what could be arguably seen as a contemporary sequel to Joe 90, given the brain patterns that are actually involved and given the shenanigans that are going on. It's the first episode of the Joss Whedon series, Dollhouse. A series which lasted for 2 seasons, but we're into episode 1, the opening side of things, with Alicia Dushku and lots of other fine folk, Dollhouse. So that's Resonance Rewind for next week. But for now, to Jared Palmer, to Jessica Burtis, to Victoria Simmons, did you enjoy your first ever Resonance Rewind, Victoria?
Yes, I did, once I find the unmute button. Yeah, it was very good, very interesting to hear everybody's opinions.
And a plug for your latest single, which we obviously featured on the Midweek Drive Live.
Yes, Still a Long Way to Go is out today. So you can go and listen to it on all social or streaming platforms.
Media platforms, streaming
platforms.
You can
see it on socials as well.
In fact, you can actually download Still a Long Way to Go, and you can also get Chenga Chenga. Isn't that right, Pamela Suman?
Yeah, well, congratulations. You and I both have babies being born into the world today. Chenga Chenga, I Outlie, is coming out there too.
Ooh. Exactly. and indeed, as Phil Lewis has rightly said, Pamela is the Pollyanna of scoring. It says so on her movie music business card. Phil Lewis, as ever, a delight. Pamela Suman, that's great. And of course, we wrap up with those immortal words. Keep on resonating. We'll be right back.
Saunders is operating under the radical theory that those people are still people.
People who volunteered for this.
So we're told.
Agent Ballard, you were assigned to case designate Dollhouse over 14 months ago.
After all this, do you think the Dollhouse really exists?
I know it does. You might not be punished and I might not be alive, but this house will fall.
Everything you believe, gone.
We're in the business of using people.
You understand less about this business than you think.
We do not have a client.
We have a mission.
There's nothing real about it. They're programmed.
I need help in here!
Whose body am I in?
Did I just kill someone? Can you back and close if you want?
Every time I look deeper, I find more clients. And a web of financial and political connections all over the world, even inside the FBI.
We have a spy.
Inside the Dollhouse.
The Dollhouse deals in fantasy. That is their business, but that is not their purpose.
Should I just kill someone?
Or should I aim this at her head?
you're good.